Hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats, where we're all about packing as much into your expat life as you can. And that's what we mean when we say fat. We mean full and overflowing. This expat podcast is listened to in over 160 countries, and we have a Facebook group with, oh, I think nearly 15,000 members. I'm Kirsty Rice. I'm an Aussie. I'm based here in Qatar. And each week I'm joined by Nikki Moffat, who's also an Aussie. She's in Hamburg, Germany. So hello, Nikki Moffat.
Hello, Kirsty Rice.
Together we have 12 locations between us, which is a lot of, how many pages have I got left in my passport? And who wants to be my new emergency contact? How's things?
Well, you know, they're good. We're on spring break. The sun is shining in Hamburg and the kids are home for 2 weeks. But the weirdest thing is that we're doing this where we can see each other. And that is so
I know. Doing the intro was really strange, knowing that you were watching me do it. Because usually, we should tell people, usually we use a program where we can't see each other. And it's really awful because we can't kind of gauge each other's reactions, can we? Or sort of know when someone's about to say something or trying to say something or whatever. So I said today, but do you know my favourite thing about this, Nikki, is we're on a time limit with this one because recording will stop. So this is good. This is good for me. And awful for you, I imagine.
Yes, that's right.
So you're on spring break, but I have had spring break. I just had spring break with youngest Henry Hot Dog. We went back to Australia, had a fantastic time, and then came back here with child number 2 and 3 because not spring break in Australia, of course. This holiday doesn't even have a name because it's Easter. It's not always the Easter holiday that they have that 2 week break either. It's sometimes you get Easter and then you get the school holidays. But I think in Australia we just call this one like school holidays. The September ones, like what did you call the September ones growing up?
Well, September holidays, because we went from 3 terms to 4 terms, so you just had the same holidays every year.
Yes, so that's
how I went with it. Anyway, I have a question. So you have 3 children with you. So now the oldest at university, she's working, she's got lots of things on her plate. Is that it? Qatar is over for her now? Does she ever get to come? What, she has to pay for her own ticket? How does that work for Noah?
Well, in a paying for her own ticket, I think under our package for work, she still gets, I think, at least one flight until she's 21. She's allowed to have one flight to Qatar. Now, how it works in her life is that she's on uni holidays because, of course, you know, she's been at uni for all of 9 or 10 weeks. They're due for a holiday, you know, because, of course, when you go to uni, you go for all of 4 to 6 hours a week, it seems. So she's exhausted. But to be fair, she is working over these school holidays, and she's working every day down at the kiosk down where we've got a beach house. And so it wasn't sort of on the cards for her to come. It was very strange. She actually drove us to the airport and, you know, had to drive us in the big car because we had all of our suitcases and everything. And it was very strange, and I was getting very upset, and the other kids were like, "Mum, why are you getting so upset? You know, I don't understand. It's just, you know, you are going to be back again." But it did feel very strange to have everybody coming back to one place and her not. But she very quickly pointed out, "Mum, this is kind of like when you sent me to boarding school and you all stayed in Qatar." Yes, I'm kind of used to this, but she's 18. Do you know, she's big. She's 18. She's working. She's at uni. We're moving on to the next stage of life, but she will come back to Qatar. I should have just answered that bit very quickly for you at the beginning, but she will, yes, come back.
Excellent. Just good to know.
Yes. I guess because you don't know how that's going to work, do you? Like, you have your 2 children at home and you don't know what that's going
to
look like.
I personally can't wait for them to leave, but that's just me. we've discovered we sometimes have a different point of view about our children in our lives, you and I. So we agree on so many things, but not always that. Okay. Geographically challenged. I think this week we were going to talk about desperate expat situations. Kirsty, you shared one of yours on the Facebook group.
Yeah, because I was thinking when I flew back on just the other night, you'll be happy to know, Nikki, that I flew at the front of the plane and my two children flew at the back.
I am happy to know that. Well done, you.
So I never, as you know, I never ever fly at the front of the plane, but it was because it was school holidays. The plane was jam-packed and they weren't going to let us sit together. They were going to make them sit in a row with a stranger and me sit in a different row with two strangers. And so I just said, can I use any credits to upgrade? And because I had credits expiring, and they said yes. And I was thinking there would be more of an uproar from the two people that stayed at the back of the plane, but they were just like, whatever. Yeah,
I don't care.
So it was fabulous. But I was thinking when I was flying up the front of the plane and I was walking around and around sort of looking at people all over different parts of the plane about those different expat dramas of, you know, arriving new somewhere and being on your own, because I was looking at my two, you know, teenage, what used to be babies, thinking of all the different dramas we have had in our flights together and things that have happened that have seemed so catastrophic at the time, and that now that they were big and that they could help out and, you know, that they were far more helpful than little toddlers, what were some of other people's desperate expat moments? Did you have a desperate expat moment, Nikki?
Well, I can't remember. I didn't put it in the group, but I call one of my desperate expat moments, I also call it a MacGyver moment, and I think I've already shared it on the podcast, but it's when I was traveling with my two small children alone and my 3, 4-year-old, 5-year-old announced she needed to go to the bathroom, but we were on the runway and there was lightning and no one was allowed to get up and go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
So I used the air sick bag. I moved my children around, used the air sick bag, and she was able to relieve herself from the seat. And I had wipes and I had my other child screaming, saying, "This is the most disgusting thing I've ever seen." And I said, "Well, a few options here. This one's better for everybody." So that was a pretty desperate moment, but I'm also pretty proud of it because I sorted it all out.
Yes. I'm very proud of that one.
And I saved the air hosties a lot of problems, really, because what are they going to do with a wet seat?
Yes, I did like Janine Williams, who said she had her bag snatched by a motorbike gang in her first week in KL in Malaysia. With her old address book and all of her friends' numbers in Australia gone, she was devastated. She said she had to go to the police station and they asked her to type her own police report. As they couldn't do it. And then she visited the toilet and promptly pressed what she called the bum wash button by mistake, which squirted her in the eye. I could definitely identify with that, with the whole, can you remember, just the whole getting lost every time you move.
Yeah.
And that for the first 6 months you are perpetually lost, which just adds that extra little bit of danger to the exercise. When, you know, I can remember driving round and round and round in KL with a screaming baby in the back seat and having no idea how to get home and no idea how to get to my husband, no phone because none of that had sort of happened yet, like we hadn't been all hooked up, and just driving around and around and around, just hoping that it was all going to pan out and eventually I would find a landmark that looked vaguely familiar. And I think about it now, you know, parenting small children is hectic enough without adding new countries, new, you know, new lives, new languages, new everything.
I totally agree. And I'm just thinking, we sort of moved in the days before GPS was pretty standard in all the cars. And as you say, GPS doesn't always even help you in Qatar where you are now. So new people arriving might necessarily help that. And the other thing is, like, so but at least we sort of had mobile phones, even though not always. But imagine those poor suckers who moved in the years before us and had nothing, didn't even have local currency to use a payphone.
Oh my God, it's all relative, isn't it? Because I mean, we've talked about this before where we're, you know, I've been an expat for 20 years. And so, yes, when I first moved, and it was dial-up internet. So it wasn't like you were Google mapping where you were. And so you were using one of those old school, you know, maps that came in a book and just trying to find your way. And I realized, Nikki, how ancient we sound when we say this. But yes, the women before us were traveling by a ship. So we need to be a bit more realistic.
I know. One of my favorites was actually Tracy, who said that she moved to London. Her rental house caught fire as they were taking possession. And they had to Google how to call the fire department, which is reminiscent of us in America. We thought we had a fire in our basement, and we were Googling what could happen if we called 911 and there wasn't a fire. Like, would we be prosecuted before we called 911? Anyway, to continue Tracy's story, 4 days later, she was locked in by squatters in her temporary apartment. And they had to call the emergency services for the second time in a week to get rescued by the police, all with two kids, all in 1 week. So welcome to London, Tracy.
I remember walking in and promptly out of possible rental accommodation in Libya when husband and I walked in, went, this doesn't look too bad. And he went, oh, there's a basement. Went downstairs, promptly flew back up the stairs, said, everybody out. There was a goat in the basement. Okay. I think I saw that someone in the Two Fat Expats Facebook group was saying that we could do an entire thing on medical emergencies. And I was thinking, you know, some women are just phenomenal and amazing in how they plow on. But we had Darlene, who had a ruptured ectopic pregnancy on an aeroplane with two kids in tow and no partner accompanying her. She said everything turned out fine. It was 13 years ago, but rather harrowing. They were on their way to see family. And I think, you know, it just goes back to, Nikki, a lot of people think this expat life is very glamorous and we're all very pampered and well looked after. But I think people forget about the burning basements and stolen handbags and the goats and the bum washers getting you in the eye. Oh, expat relationships, Nikki.
Well, I was recently reminded about how sometimes we view relationships when we're an expat in a different way. So last week I went to Copenhagen to see Michelle Obama on her book tour. And
That must have been amazing.
Well, I'll talk about that later in what I'm watching. But the trip itself was very fun. And I had planned to go. A friend had contacted me and said, hey, you know, she's not coming to Germany, but she's going to Copenhagen and Amsterdam. Where should we go? And we decided to go to Copenhagen and we planned it and we bought the tickets and it was the week before the school holidays and everything was great. And then 2 days before she said, she couldn't go. There were various reasons and she couldn't go. She said, so I'll pay you for the tickets. And I said, no, I'll just get somebody else. Don't worry. Someone else can come. I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Let's go. And so I went through my phone and I thought, who else do I want to go away with on a road trip and spend the night with? We did have two hotels.
Shared accommodation?
No, because I had a terrible head cold. And so I thought, you know, I don't want to be coughing and spluttering and probably snoring all night in front of somebody. So we had, I've gone and got actually a really good deal on some hotel rooms. So I knew that was fine. So I went through the list and then I thought, who would want to come? Americans? You know, and then I thought, you know what? When the book came out, nearly everybody I knew put a photo of it in their Facebook feed and said, oh, I'm loving this book. I love it, love it, love it. So I thought, oh, well, I've got a broad brush that I can do. So I asked sort of three or four people and they, for various reasons, small children, whatever, couldn't make it. And then I thought, you know what? I think I know this girl. She's Swedish Canadian and I think she'd like to come. So I asked her and her husband works from home 3 days a week because he builds a boat. Amazing story, but we don't need to go there now. And she said, yep, let me talk to my husband and I'll sort it out. And she said, yes, let's go. And you know what? She was the absolute best person to take. And I spent the whole time saying, yeah, I'm really glad you're here. and not my other friend. No, not, I would have loved her to be there as well. But it just was one of those situations where she's Swedish, Canadian, she speaks Danish. So that was really good. So as soon as I knew she was coming and spoke Danish, I forgot all my organizing. I just let that go to the wind. So when we turned up, we were looking for the car park for the hotel and we couldn't find it. We just pulled over on the side of the road. She just yelled out the window to some guy and they had a lengthy conversation in Danish. And then we pulled into the car park. She could read all the machines where you have to prepay stuff. It's all in Danish.
Oh.
You know, just those things. We were going from the hotel to the venue. She knew exactly how to do it. I didn't have to look at her, how to get to the train station or what train to get. She just knew all that. It was just really very handy to have her. And she was a great traveling companion. She's a load of fun. And so we just had a really great time. So it just reminded me that, you know, I think if you're at home and you went through your sort of four or five closest friends and then you thought, do I really want to ask this next, you know, another group of people? Like, do I want to start on the next list? I just think, I just reminded me that, you know, and then the next morning we went and met a friend of mine in Copenhagen and had breakfast with her. And it was just really easy and lovely. And they didn't know each other, had never met each other, but we're able to, you know, we're all able to sit around the table and have a good time. So it just reminded me of, you know, just the intensity and the depth and the time difference in expat relationships versus maybe non-expat ones.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And I wonder whether that whole expat relationships makes you realize you don't have to have friends that are exactly the same age as you with exactly the same children that are the same age as yours.
Yeah.
And yeah, because I see that a lot at home when I see my friends have all got friends from school or friends from, you know, that are from their world. And then, you know, I think of that we have friends that are a lot older than us because, you know, maybe we met them on a bus one day when we were both going to go and get a certain thing or do something, do you know, and you just realize that they were fascinating, you know, and you wanted to know more about their lives because their lives were so different than yours. And then all of a sudden they become really best friends, even though their children might be 15 years older than yours or 15 years younger, do you know? And someone said this to me the other day. In Australia, we do have very good friends who have adult children who are in their 30s, and they actually said to us, you treat us like we're the same as you, whereas when we meet your friends or other people in the neighborhood, they treat us like we're the older people.
Yeah, I get that, but I'm noticing now that I am the older person in some relationships.
And yes,
and I'm like, oh, I've got these friends and they all have very small children, so they can't be in their late 40s, can they? I don't know how old they are, but I just assume they're way younger than me. I think it's, you're more open. I think we've said this before, you know, you're more open to people from all different walks of life because you have exposure to that. It's not, you know, when you're in your zone, and you know, when I'm in my zone here, like I go to school, come home, whatever, have those relationships. That's one group of people. But then you do other things, join clubs, go to coffee mornings. You just meet a different range of people as well. So I just think it's the exposure that I think you don't necessarily have if you're never leave a country and live there all the time. That's for me.
Expat money. You and I were going to talk about trauma insurance, Nikki, because we've had a conversation just amongst us before, and then you put a note out in the group to ask about people that had trauma insurance. So in Australia, they call it TPD. So it's trauma and death insurance. And a lot of reasons why people have it in Australia is if you've got a mortgage and you've got, you know, maybe kids at school or, you know, regular bills, you might want to take out trauma insurance in case you are injured so that you are incapable of going to work, or, you know, you have some sort of illness that is long lasting and you're going to need some sort of payout to help you, you know, get the mortgage done and whatever. And I was interested because it's something that we have kept in our expat life. I don't know whether it's because, full disclosure, my husband's father worked in insurance. So maybe it was just he'd seen enough stories that he just, it was, you know, drilled into them that you had to have it. Nikki, you're a no trauma insurance person, aren't you?
Well, we're in no additional trauma insurance. So through our employment, there is some trauma insurance. I think that what you're talking about is additional trauma insurance. So we have a form of, through my husband's, through the German government, when you pay taxes into Germany, you have a measure of protection. So you get paid 80% or some high percentage of your salary, and you may get a payment, etc. I didn't read the fine details in German, but it does, before we have this conversation, but it does exist within our employment contract. And I did notice on the post that we put up, it was that lots of European people said, I don't have this, you know, it's covered, we don't need it. And then other people talked about how their health insurance had covered things. What I thought was interesting was that it doesn't really cover other things. Like you said, you know, mortgages, income, all that kind of stuff. So it's not just paying your medical bills. It's actually paying more than that. It's covering a broader scope of things because it's a lump sum payment. So in Australia, I think that employers have, it's with the life insurance. So as part of your superannuation, life insurance, et cetera, that you can also have a trauma insurance, but a lot of Australians take out additional insurance on top of that. I seem to remember that from when we lived there. Is that right?
Yeah. So you can have income protection insurance, which is what we have. Yeah. And that would be additional. And the reason, and I think, you know, a lot of it comes down to who you are working for and what your contract is. Because I know if you're working for a big multinational corporation, I think there is a level of safety there of, well, someone would get us home, someone would, you know, make sure that we were medevaced, or, you know, someone, I mean, because it's funny how your priorities change. Because when we had very small children, for me, it was all about getting medevaced out. I just wanted to know that someone would medevac me out. But I was in places like, you know, Libya. And at that stage, Jakarta was a different place as well. You know, I mean, now Jakarta is completely different when it comes to having babies and small children and whatever. But, you know, I just always wanted to know, well, I'm fine being in this location, but just if something really goes wrong, will you get me on a plane and get me out of here? Whereas now I don't think that so much in Qatar. You know, my children are older, I think I would be more than capable of getting someone on a plane and getting them out if required. I, you know, we have a house back in Australia, so there's that comfort level of going back there. But I think income protection insurance is really, really important. But I also think people need to be really well aware of what their health insurance cost is, because you want to have choice. And I guess what I'm getting at, Nikki, is that in my 30s with a young family, what I was looking at is very different to now that I've turned 50 and I have older children, and I'm seeing some of the and I'm seeing some of the things pop up around me. So, you know, I've seen a very close friend have her husband diagnosed with ALS, or we would say in Australia, motor neurons disease. And so his job just stopped immediately, you know, because it was unsafe to have him at work. And so watching the negotiations of that unfold of, you know, well, how do they get out of the country? You know, how long do they get to stay? How does the treatment look? When does your job officially end? When do you actually get stopped being paid? You know, all of these things are probably through youth didn't think about, because it seemed a million miles away that something so terrible. I never expected that I would get breast cancer and that I would want to choose to have some of my treatment I had in Qatar. That's fine. It was all free. It was all covered under work. Some of my treatment I had in Australia and I paid for that. But that's where my trauma insurance came in, because I did get a payout from my insurance because I was diagnosed with cancer.
So on our poll, you were one of the people that said, yes, I have trauma insurance and yes, I have used it. So I wanted to, like, if you could share what you used it for, and also talk about how it's different because you're an expat. It's not like you were living in a country and all your family and friends were there and, you know, all your support was in one place.
Yeah. So I had paid, you know, trauma insurance with my husband for the whole time we'd been away. And I hadn't really thought about it because, you know, it's one of those automatic deductibles that comes out and it just comes out under your insurance, right? And so I hadn't really thought about it. And it was only because, and I sound so daft when I say this, but it was only because we rang the insurance guy to say I had breast cancer, thinking we would have to declare it, right? That now, yeah, our insurance might cost more. He had to say to us, oh, well, you'll get a payout then. And we were like, really? And he said, Kirstie, what do you think it's for? You know, this is what it was for. It was for a situation like this. And it was I don't feel comfortable saying how much. You know, it was enough that you go, wow, well, this is fine. I'm absolutely fine. If anything, you know, I'm not going to be caught short. I could fly back and forth as many times as I needed to. I think the bill in the end for me to have 6 weeks of radiation, you know, with no private health insurance in Australia, and that's going every day for 6 weeks, ended up being about $15,000, and that was no problem. You know, I didn't worry
about where that money was going to come from.
No, I wasn't worried at all. And so, and you know, that was such a big thing for us, in that that was when my daughter was starting boarding school. I wanted to be there for her. If we had not been insured and I hadn't been able to be with her because we couldn't afford it, I would have been absolutely beyond devastated, you know, to have to say to her, I'm sorry, I can't be with you because I have to be in Qatar having my radiation and can't be there. And do you know, it just would have been the absolute pits to me. So it was so, so worth it. And it just took away all fear. There was just this really lovely soft cushion of, no matter what happens, we're going to be okay.
Yeah. And was that under income protection, or that was a separate trauma? Like, which particular insurance? No,
that was, because it all comes under the same thing. I think it's called TPD. So it's trauma and income protection, whatever. So that would be my advice. Now, if you know that you work for a company that's going to pay all of your medical bills, no matter where you have them and where you have to fly, and they'll medevac you out of wherever you are, well, then go for it and you're fine. If you're worried that one of you might be incapacitated, and what would you do if you didn't have your income coming in? Maybe that's something you need to look at as well, if you think that it would be a drama.
Yeah, I mean, I would say for ours, and I don't know the answer to this, but I would assume that if something happened and we needed to use the income protection that comes with my husband's work, that we would need to stay in Germany to do that. And so what does that mean for us? Does that mean that then we're stuck here, and if we wanted to go home, how would that work, et cetera, et cetera? So I think it's just another thing worth considering when you look at your contract, where you're living, what stage of your life you are. I know that when we talked about this, just the two of us, you said that your in-laws stopped this particular kind of insurance at one stage in their life. They made a decision when to stop that.
The minute their youngest child had finished university. Oh, no, not university, school, because I guess they were paying school fees, right? Yeah. And they said, well, the minute we finished paying school fees, we knew that we were fine. We didn't need the income protection insurance. And I guess that makes sense. It is for people in a certain age bracket too, isn't it, where you've got to that stage. You know, I ran into a friend yesterday who's just found out he's lost his job, and he seemed quite calm about it. I was thinking that's when you can tell the people who are financially okay, you know, because they've got their, you know, because in the same conversation I was commenting on, oh, that's a very nice watch. And he said, yes, we sold a property, and that was my present, you know, from when we sold a property, you know, I bought myself a nice watch. And I was thinking, you know, that's the thing. And I know that anyone who's in their early 30s with young kids is would be listening to this going, oh my God, I can't ever imagine being like that, because that was definitely G and I. You know, we were scraping by on the bones of our bottoms when we had little tiny children and traveling around a lot. And then suddenly you get find yourself 20 years and you have, you know, things are, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. You can see that financial stability. But yes, it's that whole thing. What would you do if it all ended tomorrow and you had to get on a plane? We talk about it every week, Nikki, but I really think income protection insurance, if you have a mortgage that needs to be paid and cost for family and whatever that is hitting you every week, is definitely something you need to look at to make sure that you're either covered with the company that you're with or that you need to do.
Yeah. So for location, 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 Kirsty, this week we're up to W. W is for Vasana. I'm going to say that. Please don't yell at me, Dutch people. So that was really, came up. A lot of people live there in our poll of where do you live, starting with W. And I spoke to somebody there called Uli. Uli is an Australian German. She's lived in a lot of different places. Someone on Facebook referred to her as the mayor of Vasana. So I thought she would be the perfect pick to interview. She's also coming up to the end of 4 years living there. So she's got the rosy glow of leaving surrounding her, which if you can remember it, Kirsty, that can be a very powerful tool, the leaving part. Her kids go to the American School of The Hague, or ASH. And ASH is one of the teams that we play all the time in our Northern European sporting loop. So Willow's been there a few times. And you may also remember Ash from my favourite new book, Safe Passage Across Networks, because it's where the Safe Harbour program started. And believe it or not, Uli is the chair of the welcoming committee. So you can imagine, Kirsty, that was a happy coincidence for me. And you can also imagine it was a bit of a shock for her in terms of the interrogation I subjected her to. But then we got to the fat five questions, as we always do. And I started, of course, with, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much are you in love with Vasana?
I'm quite in love. Yes, I'm really actually regretting that we're leaving. I think it's time to move on. It's a good time for us to move. But I have loved every moment we've spent here. It's fantastic.
That's so good. What's your best local find?
Oh, that's a tough one. I don't know. I love the whole Dutchness of the place in, you know, this kind of time of year, the springtime with the flowers. So I love the whole, the tulips coming out and people taking photos in the tulip fields. And yes, it's super pretty.
What drives you crazy?
Oh, shall I be honest?
Yeah.
Okay. I hope the Dutch are not offended by this. I do love them, really, but Dutch service stinks. It's so bad. I don't think I've actually experienced worse service anywhere else in the world. So that drives me nuts. The Dutch are just, can be a little gruff, and they make you feel like it's them doing you a favor rather than you paying their wages. So it's a little, having come from other places, that's a little hard to stomach. However, when you understand the way the Dutch are brought up, it's really things that are unnecessary. They just don't do them. So they won't constantly try and please you when you haven't asked for it. So, you know, it's just a different way of approaching it. So I now know, we always say that it's a thing that we say here in Vasana is, you ask, do you have something or can you do something? And they say no in a one-word answer. Then we ask everybody to just say, so how can we make this possible? And normally then their thinking changes because they do want to do a good job. Just previously you didn't ask for it. You just asked, do they have this or not?
Aha, so it's a cultural thing. So it's just, yes, the way they're, sure, thinking about it. Yeah.
Yes, and it's not that they're unfriendly or anything. It's just that this is the way they deal with things and everybody expects that. So we have other expectations. You know, it's us who have to change, really, being here.
That's a great tip.
It's just something you just adjust to. And then when you go back to the States, for example, yeah, you just think, just leave me to eat my lunch and don't ask me every 2 seconds if I want something else. So, yeah, you just adjust.
What's one place you'd love to live?
I'd love to live back in Australia. I love Australia. I don't know if you feel the same, but I miss Australia every single day. I miss the fact that people are up and about at 6:30 in the morning, with a smile on their face, and they are active and friendly, and the day just starts better than elsewhere. So I'd love to go back.
It might have to do with the weather, just a tip.
Yes, for sure, for sure.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given about your expat life?
Okay, I give this advice to new people. I pass this on. Somebody said to me when I first arrived, in like a little speech they gave, as an expat parent, if you have children and a partner to look after, it's really important to put your own mask on first before you put everybody else's mask on them. So look after yourself as well, rather than after everybody else. And I think most of the time the stay-at-home parent forgets that. They neglect their own happiness and just try to make everybody else in the family happy. But if you don't look after yourself a little bit, it will reflect on the others.
Yeah, that's good. That's good advice. What about the biggest lesson that you've learned?
I think the biggest lesson I've learned is that it's all about your own attitude. If you come with the wrong attitude, you're never going to like a place. You're never going to integrate. If you come with an open mind and a positive attitude, you can make friends fast, and they will be your friends forever, regardless of where they are. But it definitely starts with you.
Yeah, that is true, and that's a great lesson. The other thing we do is at the end of the podcast, we give people recommendations on books we're reading or podcasts we're listening to or TV shows we've been watching, something new we've found. Do you have anything lately that's a new favorite for you?
I tend to read only when I go on holidays these days because my life is so busy. I just don't seem to have the time. And I found on my last holiday in particular, I was going to read, and then I started listening to a podcast and I just couldn't stop. So I've been listening to the Serial podcast, which has just completely gripped me. I'm a big fan of watching documentaries, and the last one I watched was the Madeleine McCann documentary.
Uh-huh.
That really grabbed me because that affected me because I have a child of the same age, and I basically did exactly what that family did. I used to go for dinner and put my baby monitor in the room and walked out, you know, and sat 20 meters away from the room. And for me, I never thought any less of, you know, anything of that until that case happened where money got taken. So that really affected me. And the same, I watched the Neverland documentary.
Yes.
Called Leaving Neverland, the Michael Jackson documentary, and that's really affected me. In fact, I've cancelled all of Michael Jackson out of my Spotify. So, and I was a huge fan at the time. So I do enjoy watching documentaries.
Oh, that was great. She's really good. Well, their answers our question, Nikki. I think that was one of the last things we asked each other when we talked about that Michael Jackson thing, wasn't it? Would you still listen or would you delete everything? And there is a woman who has force of her convictions, doesn't she? Like, well done.
Absolutely. And that's why I sort of left that last bit in, because I thought that was interesting. And also the Maddie McCann stuff about how, you know, lots of people with children our age can relate to that because we used to do
it. We all did it.
We all did.
Yeah. Oh, look, I remember one of the best holidays I had. I was very pregnant with my second. We took our first child away. She was two, just turned two. And we went to Langkawi. And, yeah, we picked the room and the hotel and everything based on we will be able to put her down, put the baby monitor in the room and go and sit in the restaurant, you know, which kind of overlooked water, and we would have dinner. And, you know, everyone did. And I remember those particular holiday packages at the time all around Europe. That was part of those, you know, those little villas and groups when you went on those holidays, was that they would ring a bell, you know, like saying, and because I can remember this in Libya, so some British friends were saying, oh, we go on these, you know, whatever package holidays, and you go out to dinner and everybody leaves their kids in the room and they ring a little bell, you know, to say that, yes, we've walked the aisles of the hotel and we couldn't hear anyone crying. Do you know that was their way of, yeah. And thinking, not sure about that. But, you know, I definitely thought if I had my baby monitor and I was, you know, 20 metres away, what was the harm? And I think that's why it was such a big story at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Did you watch that documentary? I know we're getting off track, but I did attempt it. I watched the first one and I thought, no, this doesn't feel the same quality as some of the other things we've watched.
Yeah, no, I didn't watch it. I haven't seen it. It doesn't really interest me as much. I can certainly relate. It's a relatable story, but the Kate, like, I'm not as into it as I'm into some other things. So I didn't watch it.
Okay, but no, and I also loved her comment about Australia and people being so happy in the mornings. And because it just reminds me of my Welsh friend, Sarah, who always says, I don't know, people say Australians are so happy. So you bloody well should be. Look at where you live. All right, Nikki, what are you reading? I can see in our little notes here that you've written something about our footy tipping comp.
I have, because apparently I should be reading what the form of all the AFL teams are, because I'm not going very well. So we do have a Two Fat Expats footy tipping comp on AFL.com. We're four rounds in. It all seems about right. Kirsty's near the top. Nikki's near the bottom. The top five are, though, DCOG, which is Donna.
That would be our Two Fat Expats friend, Donna Coghill, who's always in our Two Fat Expats Facebook group.
That's right.
And she is based out of Melbourne. And I'm impressed that she's number one, because I happen to know she's a Melbourne supporter and they haven't been going well, so she mustn't be picking.
And in second place, black and white winners, Kirsty, what's going on?
That would be my sister.
There you go. Your sister. Then Bombers Fan Abroad is in third place, Lisa S. At fourth place is Shemozzle, which is you, Kirsty. Fifth place, we have Andrew C, A-C-C Casey. I assume that's Andrew Casey.
Oh.
I'm in 18th spot and I'm currently being beaten by someone called No Clue Pom, which is horrifying. And in position, we've got the same points, but I don't know why she's listed ahead of me, by Lizzie B, who's your daughter.
That would be my Lizzie. That is a cracker. I haven't actually looked at the, you know, the who's leading the whatever. And of course, what I need to know now is just how far in front my sister is of me.
I think it's just like a point or two. It's not actually that much. I'm using a scattergun approach. One week I tipped just all the same tips as most of the people. So they show you who's tipping most sides in the competition, because there's 250,000 people in the overall competition.
Yes.
Not just not our little group. And it shows you which percentages tipped most teams. So I went one week with that, got a terrible result. Went another week with some tips I listened to on a podcast, got a terrible result. So I've decided I'll just, now it's a scattergun approach. Now I do half-half, just, you know, whatever I feel like.
It has been a very strange start to the season, right? And those who are down the bottom who are regular tipsters would say, you could only be on top if you knew nothing about football, you know, because it's been such a strange season. But it really has been, and I keep waiting for it to kind of even out. And every week there'll be two or three games where you just can't believe that, you know, A has beaten B. Yes, but I am loving the footy tipping. Is it too late for people to join? Like, I don't know the answer to this. If they join now, would they just get all of the away teams from the rounds before, or do they start from scratch? I don't know how it works.
Yeah, but, okay. So four rounds in, nine tips a round. So what could the most points you could have is 36, right?
Yes.
So the 20 is the top score. So it's as you say, it's a pretty low scoring competition. Just so you know, Michelle is only 1 point ahead of you. So she's on total tips. You're on 19. I think if you joined now and got all the away teams, you'd still be beating me, and I'm on 15. So that's less than half I've got. So there you go. So tippingafl.com, I think the link's in the group if you want to join. Come and join, and if you think you know about AFL, or even if you think you don't, just come and see if you can beat me, because I'm the low target and the name for Kirsty. Another thing about reading, I just wanted to say that people are actually reading our Two Flat Expats Facebook group. I had a message this week from a friend who said, hey, it's been ages since you guys put it together, but big thumbs up for the TFE units. I just had a distant cousin ask me a question about becoming an expat for the first time. And instead of sending my usual snarky, let me Google that for you, LMTGF. Whatever, I instead decided to be helpful and say, ah, go and look in TFE and look under unit. So I'm glad that one, someone uses the units, and two, that they're helpful. And I was also very happy to find out about this particular acronym. She just wrote the letters and Mitch's looking at it and saying, I think that means I'm going to Google it for you. You know, because some people ask you questions and you just say, yeah, why are you asking me? Google's there.
Yes, that's one of our favourite ones at work from customer service. If customer service gets asked a question, there's quite often the let me Google that for you. Yeah. So, Nikki, I want to know, am I in the right allotted topic section now that I can ask you, what was Michelle Obama Live like?
Okay, I've got so many thoughts about this, so many. And my friend and I spent a long time unpacking it on the night and the next day and since with other people. But look, I was just a little bit disappointed. I was excited to go. I'm happy I went. I have no compunction at all about going or seeing her or paying for it or doing the trip. But I think I was a little bit let down. Now, a few things. The moderator was Rachel Ray. Now,
is that the cooking show?
Yeah, that's exactly what three or four people say. And then the rest have a sort of a blank look. So she came out onto the stage. Now, can I just say, I think I was a little bit disappointed because the build-up was so good. It was amazing. So we're sitting in the packed, like they give away a lot of tickets to youth organizations, community groups, book clubs. So the cheaper seats are very high. It was 100% full. It was packed. There was a great atmosphere. The social media was amazing. They were streaming on the big screens, all the social media with the hashtag, you know, I am becoming. So my friend and I put up our photo. Oh, hi. You know, we've come on a road trip. We got flashed onto the big screen, took a photo, thought we were hilarious middle-aged children. So they were doing that. And then some people were putting photos up and then Michelle Obama or her people were replying to them. So someone said, here I am with my mum, and Michelle Obama replied and said, you know, that's great. My mum is my rock. I'm so excited that you're here with her. I hope you have a great night. All in the lead up and the build up. So it was so exciting. Right. Everything. I was like, wow, these people are on point. Everything's happening. Then they put these big clips up of, time of her in the White House. They did some of the James Corden carpool karaoke clip, you know, clips being interviewed, et cetera, et cetera. Then we go to stage and it flashes up and it's Rachel freaking Ray. And I was thinking, if you're having a moderator, because I said to my friend, I can't believe I didn't Google who's going to be the moderator. She said, oh, well, be exciting. We can find out. And it was Rachel Ray. And we really thought, you know, it could have been a Danish person.
Yeah.
And I've since Googled it and I've since looked it up. And in every location, she had a different person. In London, she had Stephen Colbert. Maybe I would have liked that better. But having said that, anyone could have done it because the whole thing was incredibly scripted. So even though it was, you know, staged as a conversation between Rachel Ray and Michelle Obama, everything was scripted. So every time a particular topic came up, a series of photos went behind, you know, here are photos of
your
children.
So you knew it had been scripted.
So it wasn't like it was a conversation flowing in a particular direction. The other thing was right at the beginning, the last little clips they had were people saying, I am becoming, you know, the book is about, you know, encouraging you to become something, whatever you want to be. And then they went to flash the stage and they had five people standing in the dark and then they put a spotlight on one and then they said, hi, my name is Rosa Sanchez and I'm an immigrant to America from Mexico. I was thinking, why? Good on you, Rosa. Good job. But why are you in Denmark telling me you're an immigrant to America from Mexico? And now I live in Copenhagen and I'm bringing the Mexican food to Copenhagen. I am becoming a Spanish chef. There were five people. Four of them were Americans. One of them was a sixth grader and said, you know, I'm a sixth grader. I do this. You know, science is my favorite subject. I'm becoming an astrophysicist. But I just thought it was a massive miss that they had all these people who were Americans. Like, wouldn't they have had Danish people? Like, isn't the point that they're trying to do that? The other thing is that Rachel Ray and Michelle Obama apparently do go back. So she, you're right, she's cooking, a cooking kind of person, cooking show in the US. She has spent time in Copenhagen in the past, apparently. I Googled it, that, and she has a line of Danish cookware that she said inspired by my time in Copenhagen. So I guess that she felt some relationship to that.
Yeah.
I went up to a group of Danish mothers in the school, at the school the next day, and I said, have any of you heard of Rachel Ray? And they sort of said, is she big in Denmark? And they sort of looked at me and said, is she a cooking person? I said, okay, all right. There's a little bit of name. Yeah. But the other thing they did was, which I thought was not ideal, was that Rachel Ray got very excited and she talked over Michelle Obama when she was answering questions. Which, when you think about it, we talk all over each other all the time because we get so excited. But one, we're not professional interviewers. And the other thing is that there, it was an audience of not native English speakers. So to have people already following a conversation is not in their native language, you know, and don't get me wrong, Danes, your English is excellent, like much better than any other languages I speak. But I thought it must be very difficult, quite difficult for people to follow when they were doing that sort of, having said that, look, Michelle Obama is amazing. She's very polished. She's very concise. You know, she's very likable. But if you had listened to the book being read to you like I did on Audible, and then watched the Oprah interview, I got nothing else. I don't know one more single thing about Michelle Obama, about her life, about her time in the White House, about growing up, than I did from hearing the book and watching the Oprah interview. So I don't know. Is that your expectation when you go to, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's a show.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a show. It's almost like a play, if you know what I mean.
Is this the modern day dilemma of going to see, you know, the person? Have we lost all that joy of the live appearance? Because I'm just thinking about, you know, Jim Jefferies, the comedian who did the his most viral thing is he talked about guns in America. And two friends were telling me they went to go and see him because he's their favorite comedian. And something a friend said has really stuck with me. He said there was a big screen at the back where Jim Jefferies was, there he was standing on stage, but he was up on this big screen. So he said, Kirstie, I kept losing myself because I kept watching him on the big screen. And then I'd think, stop watching him on the big screen. He's there right in front of you, you know, but I'd become this person that's used to being, you know, trained to look on the big screen. But similar sort of thing of there wasn't a lot of something new because if you've read everything on the internet, if you've, you know, listened to everything you can, it's hard to get new stuff when you go to see someone, to get an insight into them.
Yeah, it's also very slick, right? So she's got a book deal with the same company that he has a book deal with, her husband, Barack Obama.
Obama.
So she writes the book, does the book tour. She can't tell any stories that are going to be in his book, right? So she can't say anything. So it's so slick. It's so, at one point, someone asked her a question. Rachel Ray asked her a question. She said, I can't really answer that because tomorrow it'll be in all the papers that I said something so and so and so about politics. So it's really, like, it was just very slick. I did read about the London thing because I thought, oh, Stephen Colbert, how exciting. And that would have been much better. And then I watched it. I watched some clips from it. I was like, oh, it's just like watching Oprah and Rachel Ray. Like, there was no, her responses were exactly the same, pretty much word for word.
Yeah.
The other thing is they had Twitter questions at the end. You know, here's some questions from Twitter. Yeah. Same questions in London as they were in Copenhagen.
Like, no, that's disappointing.
Yeah. So I just think, was I expecting a show? Like, was I expecting more of a conversation? I think I was.
But what you got was a show.
What I got was a show. It was more like a play, right? So I'm going to see a scripted conversation between two people.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like,
I don't want that.
No. But are my expectations wrong? Like, I'd love to sort of speak to, I don't know, well, Carly Finlay, who, you know, has recently written a book and done a bit of book tour about that. I would love to know from her point of view, do the people ask the same questions all the time and does she answer the same way? I mean, do you have to focus on stories from the book? Is that how it works? I remember when Lee Sales' book came out and I listened to those three different podcasts about it, you know, before we talked about the book itself. And they were very similar, but they were still a little bit different as well. I don't know. I just felt like this was very much a performance, and I don't like her any less, but I don't like her any more than I did beforehand.
Is it that you've lost a bit of respect? Because I would totally lose respect. I mean, how do you have a conversation with Michelle Obama and then you realize that taking exactly the same questions and presenting them as new off of Twitter, that's really uncool. And having formulaic responses and only having the same questions, I mean, that's also someone that's treading so carefully because they are so worried about saying the wrong thing that everything has to be scripted. And yes, I understand you can't give other stories that, you know, maybe ruin, you know, someone else's book or whatever. But I mean, is it that the truly remarkable, intelligent and entertaining people are those people that just speak off the cuff and can do anything? I mean, they're the people we most admire, aren't they? Because we all know that if our life was completely scripted, we could all do it.
That's right. Look, she's certainly an incredibly impressive person.
Absolutely.
I don't want people to think that she's a hack.
I've read the book myself and I loved it, and I think she is just absolutely remarkable. But yeah, I'm disappointed by what you're telling me, because I think
it was like a play, like a performance, like, and maybe that was my bad for thinking it was going to be a little bit more, you know. I mean, when I say the London one's exactly the same, of course in London they talked about her meeting the Queen, and you know, when she touched the Queen on the back, and that was a big deal, and of course you'd bring that up in London, but that's also in the book. It's not like that's not in the book. Like, that wasn't scripted. That was in the book. In Copenhagen, she wore a Danish designer. Great. You know, she talked about, but okay, here's the thing. So here was maybe one thing. Rachel Ray asked her what her favorite meal that she'd ever had in Denmark was. And she did say, well, you know, maybe my most famous meal was when I, you know, had met the royals and I had lunch or dinner with the royals. And she talked about that. And then she kind of had nothing else. And then she said, and then last night, you know, when I arrived at the hotel, you had delivered tacos and tequila to my room. And that was pretty good. And I'm like, yeah. And my Swedish friend who's lived in Denmark was sitting beside me saying, all they had to do was give her one word, you know, like tell her that she, you know, had a great smørrebrød or whatever that is. Sorry, Danish people for mispronouncing that. But, you know, they just had to give her something, like to say that you've been to Denmark and your best meal was tacos. I was just a bit, I feel less like she's a real person, but I certainly remain impressed by her. I do remain impressed by her. Anyway, I had lots of thoughts and I've kept them all to myself. I haven't told you any of those before now, which I'm quite proud about.
Anyway. Oh, that's brilliant. I'm really glad you went. And I can't imagine what it was like just being in the same room as her. I think that would have been...
We were all excited.
Yeah. Now, I know we've taken up a lot of time on what we've watched and seen, so I'm not going to go too in depth, but one of the books that I had read for book group was The Hate You Give, and I watched the movie
a couple
of nights ago, and the movie is fantastic. And I know it's not often we say that the movie is as good as the book, but I really, really enjoyed the movie. It really makes you think, and what I liked about it was my teenagers really like the movie as well. So I think we've kind of covered The Hate You Give before, but it's for those that haven't watched it, just very quickly, it's about an African-American teen who lives in a very African-American neighborhood called Garden Heights, and her parents choose to send her to a very kind of white bread school down the road and out of the area, thinking that they're giving her a bit of opportunities and education. One of her friends from her home suburb is shot and she's a witness, and it's all about sort of the Black Lives Matter movement in America. And it just raises so many questions and conversations, you know, when you're looking at the fact that she's going to a different school and how out of touch she is with her own neighbourhood and then sort of getting back into that neighbourhood and what it is about drug culture in America and police brutality, everything. So if you're interested in a movie of that, I would totally recommend it. I thought it was really, really good. And the other movie I watched, completely different, Mary Queen of Scots. Have you seen the promos for that, Nikki?
I have not, no.
Okay, so that's about Queen Elizabeth and Mary Queen of Scots and their little power struggle. So it's after Mary Queen of Scots has returned to Scotland and is now the Queen of Scotland, but she's constantly trying to work out sort of how she can get away back into England. And it gives you kind of a little snippet of Queen Elizabeth, you know, barren, unmarried, and the deal that they do that Mary Queen of Scots' son will become the next heir. But it's a really interesting look at two women in that time who were ruling. I haven't read any press about this, so I don't know what the general public feels about this one, but it's another one of those ones, kind of, you know, like when you're watching The Crown and you're going, have they made this bit up or did this really happen?
Well, I want to say I have seen one thing about the movie. I think I saw one of the actresses interviewed and she said that in the movie there's a meeting between Mary and Elizabeth that never happened in real life.
But
that,
right.
That into the movie. Is that one of the things you're wondering about? Okay.
Yes. I was thinking, did that really happen? You know, if they just put this in here because it makes it a little... They do it in a very cloak and dagger way. Also, I didn't know, and I need to go and look this up, and maybe one of our listeners can send us a note and let us know. Queen Elizabeth had the pox, and so... She goes from being beautifully, you know, with lovely, beautiful skin to covered in
the white
pustules for wanting right. To then having to hide her scabby skin. So, yes.
I think that's true. I did.
Right. That. Yeah, that'd be a big one to make up, wouldn't it? But then again, so is having the two characters meet if they didn't really meet.
Yeah, that's true too. Yes. Okay. Good to know. That was a plane watch. Would you recommend anyone watch it not on a plane or?
Look, it's watchable. Yeah, it is watchable. It's not, I lasted all the way through, right, sort of falling asleep or turning it off.
Oh, especially in your very nice seat.
Oh, in my very nice seat. I tell you what, there were some people sitting next to me so it's a 14-hour flight from Adelaide to Doha. Sometimes it's 12, sometimes it's 14, when you just depend on headwind, whatever. But they were then going to do a 15-hour flight to Miami. Now, you would normally...
Oh, my God.
Us, right? But you would normally say that. You would normally say, oh, my God, imagine to now have to do a 15-hour flight. Not when you fly business class with Qatar Airways. You know, I was actually quite jealous of them because I was thinking, I could do this all over again. I could get back on this plane and I could do this all over again because it is so different. And I just cannot believe the vast difference between the two. So when you fly on whatever the aeroplane is, it has 247 seats in economy.
Right.
So, and I don't think I've ever been so acutely aware of that as I was while I stood in business class waiting for my two children to come from row 40 of the economy to meet me. And I watched the sea of humanity, you know, come off the plane after they've done 14 hours with their knees up around their chins. And I've done 14 hours of, well, to give you an idea, when the kids were saying, did you get any sleep? Did you get any sleep? You know, blah, 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 blah. I said, oh, I went to sleep pretty much after they made my bed for me.
I was going to say, but did you have some pajamas? And did you?
I had pajamas. I had the little bag of goodies. I had two glasses of rosé champagne. I had a glass of Shiraz while I had my three-course meal. Do you know, it is just so different and it seems so unfair that it is so different from one to the other because it is You survive an economy flight when it's 14 hours.
You survive.
You just survive it. There is not one bit of it that's, oh, well, this is quite nice. There's not one tiny moment of it where you think, well, at least there's this, or nothing.
No, even when you have a whole row in the middle, it's still survival. It's like, this is a winning survival tactic.
Yes.
It's not like the luxury of the business class. And I imagine you didn't go on and then grab everyone's pillows and extra blankets to make your normal situation on a plane.
Yes. So as you know, Nikki, when I fly economy and if I can score a couple of spare seats, I immediately start hoarding pillows and blankets and I make myself a little bed, which I think is great, and which someone on our Two Fat Expats page called hillbilly business class. loved it. Anyway, Nikki, do you think, I think we've spoken for long enough, haven't we? I know we haven't given all the usual tips and tricks. Maybe you can talk to me about the Game of Thrones next week. Is this the right time to tell you that I still am yet to watch one episode?
That is fine. I think we agree on far too many things, so I'm very happy that we have things that we differ on. So I'm good for that.
Have you watched it all? Like, have you started watching now the next season? Are you that up to date with it all?
Yes, because it's been 2 years since the last season. So
there's
been plenty of time, if you didn't watch it, to watch it till now. And yeah, so everybody, Game of Thrones is back. And if you watch it, you know that. If you don't, you have no interest. So it's one of those things. It's very polarizing.
And are you a massive fan?
I don't think I'm a massive fan. I've only watched it once. Okay. And then I listened to I'm trying to find the right podcast to listen to it, to the review of the episodes. Because in Handmaid's Tale, I really got into a couple of podcasts that I really enjoyed about the post-episode Handmaid's Tale review. So I thought, I'll try and find a nice Game of Thrones one. And I haven't found the right one, but listening to a couple of them have made me go back and watch different parts of the episode again. So, yeah, but look, I haven't read the books. I'm actually, I went to a coffee morning the other day and then I just happened to be in the neighborhood. So I ducked into and there was a girl and we started talking about it before the episode. And she said, I love this. She said, all my other friends, no one watches Game of Thrones. I said, well, you'll have to come back every Friday morning for a Game of Thrones update, because there were four or five people in the group there that had been watching it. So anyway.
Do you think most people have read the books as well?
Well, yeah, I think the real fans, I'm going to call you a real fan if you've read the books as well, because I think that, you know, they're the people, you know, who read the Lord of the Rings. I mean, I cannot read those books, but I can watch the movies.
Yes, because I have an 18-year-old who is a voracious reader, as you know, and reads everything. And she hasn't watched Game of Thrones because she said, no, I haven't read the books, so I can't watch. Whereas I am of the opinion I'm never, ever going to read those books, but I possibly will watch the series. The thing that stops me now is I'm in this unique, and you must be here too, Nikki. I don't know how you get to watch the television you watch, because when the kids were little, you could put the kids to bed and watch something like the Game of Thrones, right? Mm. Now there's no putting the kids to bed because they don't go to bed. You know, I'm down to my last child who is 12 and he goes to bed at 8:30, 9 o'clock, and I'm not about to then start watching something after that. Is that what you're doing? Do you watch it later at night? Or
yeah, I put my kids, go to bed at 9 and then, I chase them away and then I watch. I watch TV to go to sleep. I watch a lot of TV at night. Yeah, I do watch a lot of TV. And my husband and I don't watch together necessarily things. So we don't have that process. We do separate screens.
Oh,
it's not that we don't like each other. It's just that we don't spend a lot of time watching TV together. He watches ridiculous YouTube videos about cars and aeroplanes and boats. I don't need that.
Yes. Yeah. I have to say my husband's, always got, if it's not a cycling magazine, it's a cycling podcast or a cycling YouTube clip. But the same could be said for me about football. Do you know, I reckon I'm back listening to 30 hours, watching of just football podcasts, television shows and commentaries.
So I have a question for you, or a discussion point quickly before we leave. One last quick thing. So some friends of mine were commenting on Facebook this week about Dirty John, and they're watching the TV show, and they're one of them didn't want to watch the last episode because it was quite scary or something, which I have no concept of because I have not watched the show. But I listened to the podcast, right? And so I said, oh, what, you haven't seen the podcast? Because if you know how it ends, why would you be scared? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You haven't listened to the podcast. And her response to me was, I don't listen to podcasts. I prefer to read books. And my response to that was, they are two totally separate things in totally different parts of your life. Like, I don't sit down on the couch, put my feet up and listen to a podcast. Like, I listen to podcasts all the time when I'm not sitting down with my feet up on the couch, when I'm walking around, when I'm on public transport, when I go to the supermarket, when I'm cooking.
Yes.
You know, all the time.
In fact, that's the last time I would listen to a podcast if I was just sitting down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If never. You're reading a book.
And podcasts are not a sit down thing.
No. Anyway, no. But it's so strange to me because I'm such a podcast evangelist and I love podcasts and I love listening to them and I'm always listening to new ones, that she said that, like, it's a choice for me and I choose books. I was like, it's not either or. Podcasts aren't either or with books. I was just checking that I wasn't too crazy to think that.
No, but then you do choose, you're not a reader of books, you'd rather listen to a book as well.
Well, I think that's a change in my brain, to be honest.
Really?
Because I read books. I was a voracious reader. I mean, I'd read all of Jane Austen's books by the time I was 11. Like, I read a lot.
Yeah. Yes.
And so I think now that audio is a better stimulation for me. I enjoy it more. And therefore, I listen to books more than I read them.
But now, that change in your brain thing, and we'll talk about this next week, but have you listened to the David Gillespie conversations about the teenage brain and what their technology is doing to them?
I have. And I have some thoughts about that as well.
All right. Well, let's do it quickly now then, because we've sort of talked about it. But can I just say about David Gillespie, while I thoroughly enjoyed this, I do fear that David Gillespie is in grave danger of becoming a professional expert. I mean, is there not one more thing he's going to turn his hand at, to write a book or be talked about? And you know my feeling about professional experts, Nikki.
Well, I don't, but I'm glad that you brought it up because that's exactly where I was going with it.
Oh, really?
Because
I
hadn't listened to the podcast, but I had seen people share it on different Facebook groups. And then I saw
getting a lot of traction.
And then I saw people say, but hang on, he's the same guy that wrote this book, which has no basis in science. And, you know, as a marketer/lawyer, you take, and this is what I say all the time about opinion pieces, you take the information that you want and you present it in a way that, you know, that makes that information work. And I think the other thing about getting a lot of traction about it is it's how we kind of think. Like, we think that. We worry about what screen time is doing. And therefore, with this particular topic, I think more people are nodding along with their heads than not.
What the actual podcast is, Conversations with Richard Feidler. The guy's name is David Gillespie, if people want to go and have a listen to it. But yes, it was a few days ago I started seeing all of my friends sharing this podcast to say you should listen to it. And David Gillespie is well known in Australia because he wrote a book about quitting sugar. Some could say that his book started in Australia the quitting sugar sort of thing, because that was then there were others that followed and wrote similar books and did whatever. But he's also talked about public versus private schools. He's by trade, he is a corporate lawyer, and I think he worked in IT, like in that field, like in software. He did something with software development, and it may even have been involved in a few startups with software companies as well. So he definitely has knowledge when it comes to what software companies do to make you use their software. But yeah, my fear. So I thought I'd had this conversation with you, Nikki, about professional experts. No, I wrote about it. That's right. I'd written about how my friend Penny just cannot stand professional experts. So I must have written something on the Four Kids, 20 Suitcases and a Beagle blog. just
we'll
recently.
Find that and we'll put it yes. in the link for the podcast in the show notes.
So I had written about the rise of professional experts, people that's all they do is professionally be experts on television and radio and tell us what we should think and do. But I have to say, I do think he did raise some really interesting points of science to yep. it. When he talked about GABA being GABA, which I had not heard of, and I went to go and look up and went, oh, this is actually quite interesting. Nikki, I have to tell you while I'm talking, my bed that I'm sitting on is actually vibrating. And I think...
what is going on?
I think it's because, as you know, Qatar is full of construction, right, with the yep. 2022. And seriously, my bed is vibrating. I think there must be that much construction going on around me that it's making the earth move. I keep looking outside to see, buildings topple.
Screen is not shaking. You look for...
Yes, I know. It looks normal outside, but I just keep thinking, what is going on? I wonder if it's someone tunnelling underneath us, because there's so many roadworks here at the moment. It's a bit scary because I'm up on the I'm on the first floor, like upstairs. Sorry, I could have just said I'm upstairs. Yes, but all I can feel is this rumble, rumble, rumble underneath me. Anyway, but we should get off. I can't imagine how long this podcast has been going for. But yes, I did think he raised valid points. I do think that there are a lot of people very worried about screens. So one thing I really agreed with, though, that really gets on my nerve is that we are made as parents to purchase this for schooling, and that we are told that it will be better for education, and that there is very little time that these devices are quite often used for education within younger children. Do you know, I know I took my middle schooler home for a week before school finished. He had his laptop. It made life really easy that he could sit down at the table and do 2 hours of work a day and be up to date with schoolwork. Do you know that he had the tools and the software and the available? He submitted an assignment that had to be done using particular software. That was all fabulous. But I think when we have children who are aged between 8 and 12 and they're being made to get iPads, and then we see how much is driven by the iPad, and we're the ones having to police it and take them away and do whatever, that's where I think we've got it so insanely wrong.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad that my children were at least a few years old before all this started, because I can't imagine yes. now. So I can imagine that there is going to be a big pushback, and there'll be medical warnings saying that you shouldn't give your child under 5 access to XYZ, and it'll be the new, there'll be a drinking age, so there'll be a social media age, and people will come up to you in the street if your child's looking at an iPad in a pram, and they'll say, take that iPad away from your child. Like they do if you're smoking while you're pregnant or something.
And get that cigarette out of its mouth.
I think people are going to do that. I think that's where it's going. But, I think it's so easy to relate to because, last year there were all the articles about the people in Silicon Valley, how they don't let their children have phones and, they only let them have limited screen time when they're at home. And these are the people making the software, and as you they're the ones that know that it's made to be addictive, and it's made to. And I certainly would say that since spending time online, I definitely have a different focus, and I have a different, I think, my brain has rewired in some ways, in that it's relaxing for me. It's not as relaxing for me to walk. When I go for my walk, I walk around the Ulster, so 10K walk, it's not as relaxing for me to do without listening to something. Like I prefer now to have headphones and to be listening to something. And when my headphone says battery low, I think, oh no, do I not have my plug-in stick in the ear ones with me? Because I think I have changed the way I approach things. And so maybe my friend with her, I don't listen to podcasts, I only read books, she's taking a higher ground.
That's a real slap in the face, isn't it? You peasant.
That's what I felt like. Anyway,
I will talk to you again next week, Nikki Moffat. It was lovely chatting.
Nice to see you, even if I'm in my pajamas with my hair.
I think we have to do this next time. I think what we're going to find at the end is that the sound may be not as good, but we will work on that for next week.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
See you then.
All right.
Bye.
See you. Bye.